Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Tuesday, April 4th, 2023. Front page. County celebrates fully staffed jail. HR cited as a reason for staffing success, by Ben Schaefer. During the March 27th Midland County Commissioner's Court meeting, Sheriff David Kreiner shared that the Midland County Jail is fully staffed with jailers. Both Kreiner and Human Resources Director Robert Segura said at various points of last year or longer, the jail has had 20 to 30 openings for the position. Segura said last July, as he was thinking of ways to fill the county's jail needs, he attended a national conference where he met representatives from RCI Resource Communications, a recruiting company that uses technology to locate eligible job candidates across the state and country, even if they're not actively looking for a job, according to their website. On October 10th, Segura brought a motion to county commissioners. The county approved moving forward with RCI to assist in recruiting. The two entities worked together to identify and screen potential candidates across the country and state. Within 60 days, there were upwards of 100 people who applied to be a jailer in Midland County. Under normal circumstances, the county would maybe receive one or two applicants in 60 days, Segura said. That created choices, Segura said. I knew going in that the sheriff's office was not going to compromise their hiring standards, nor did I expect them to. And I was able to deliver a quality of candidate that met their satisfaction, and when we were done with the 60-day project, we had a job offer against every vacancy available. Although Midland County Jail is possibly the only jail in Texas that's fully staffed, following the recent influx of jailers, according to Segura, there are 10 vacancies for patrol deputies in the county. Recruiting jailers is an entirely different task than recruiting a deputy, Segura said. RCI Communications and the county wanted to first focus on the county's biggest need first. Additionally, a patrol deputy needs to be better qualified and have more experience than a jailer. This working as a jailer is a career path, Segura said. A lot of people who want a job in law enforcement don't really know where to start. They may say, hey, I want to be a patrol officer, but it's not that easy. You may have to go to an academy. You may have to be a jailer for 3 or 4 years. You may have to have some kind of law enforcement exposure before you move up that career ladder to become a deputy. The county recently launched the recruitment campaign for the deputy vacancies. They've expanded the search into New Mexico and hope to fill the positions in the next 60 days. MDC signs $700,000 agreement with Calm Aquatics. Corporation board members also approve agreement with Hispanic Cultural Center, by Mella McEwen. Demolition of the Western United Life building last month went without a hitch, according to Sarah Harris, executive director of the Midland Development Corporation. She told MDC board members at their monthly meeting Monday that the only damage sustained to neighboring buildings was one broken window in the Vaughn building, which was immediately replaced. She then told board members she will be bringing up several options for that site at the May board meeting. Harris explained that the options will be a temporary step to make sure that block isn't blowing dust or overgrown with weeds over the coming months while a permanent development project is discussed. Promotional agreements were the focus of the meeting, with board members hearing presentations from City of Midland Aquatics and the Hispanic Cultural Center of Midland. Brad Swindig, Calm Aquatics president and executive director, offered a short presentation highlighting the center's national ranking as one of the premier aquatic centers, which results in the facilities hosting numerous national swimming and diving championships. One recent tournament resulted in more than 5,000 room nights, he told board members. He added that Calm Aquatics has also been successful in helping businesses recruit and retain employees. After his presentation and much discussion on just when the funds would be dispersed, board members agreed to pay Calm Aquatics $700,000 to replace the liner in the competition pool contingent upon an executed contract with a licensed contractor. The goal is to replace the liner during the facility's downtime in August or in February. In return, Calm Aquatics will help promote Midland for the purpose of developing new and expanded businesses. Charlene Romero McBride with the Hispanic Cultural Center of Midland gave a presentation detailing the history of the center and its education programs, focusing on the arts as well as education. Students at the center are required to maintain a 2.5 grade point average to remain in the organization, and tutoring programs are provided to assist students. Part of the center's mission is to collaborate and participate with other groups that promote Midland in social, cultural, educational, and economic development. "We hope to extend our partnership," she told board members. "We love showing off Midland." Following her presentation, board members approved a resolution paying the center $15,000 before January 31st, 2024, and an additional $15,000 before January 31st, 2025. The funds are to be used to help the center promote Midland for the purpose of promoting business development, and those efforts can include programming at the center, advertising, or both. Midland becomes the country's pay raise capital, by Katia Demervera. Anyone who wonders why the Federal Reserve hiked interest rates last month, even in the middle of a banking storm, might find the answer in Midland. Thousands of miles away from the turmoil on Wall Street, the city that ranked number one in the U.S. for inflation just over a year ago has since ceded that title, only to lay claim to a different one. The country's pay raise capital. What that looks like to an inflation-fighting central bank is a wage-price spiral, where pay and prices drive each other higher. And if that kind of dynamic can take hold in places like Midland, it can spread to the rest of the economy too. For America's monetary policymakers, at least as of now, that remains a bigger worry than the risk that financial contagion, after the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, will set off a credit crunch that stalls the economy. Last to fall. In Midland, a city of 130,000, smack in between El Paso and Dallas, swings in the economy are often tied to energy markets. But at the moment, almost a year after oil prices peaked, employers across all industries face an unprecedented hiring challenge, one that's forcing them to get creative as well as open their checkbooks. The city's hospital is recruiting high school students to draw blood, with nurses in short supply. Oil companies offer free tuition at the local university to keep employees in town. And the region's biggest hotel offers its maids a share of profits as well as full benefits. The new norm to support higher inflation is higher wages, says Toby Eoff, who, with his wife Sandra, co-owns the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center in Odessa, Midland's sister city. Wages will be the very last thing to fall. They've raised pay for staff continuously since 2021, when hotel guests began trickling back to the region after the COVID freeze. That still wasn't enough, so to keep staff from being tempted by higher-paying energy posts, they also now offer full health benefits, plus a share of annual profits, to everyone who works 30 hours a week or more. Greatest thing. The hotel is at full occupancy 4 days a week, and the bars regularly jammed until it closes, so they need all the help they can get. For Midland's workers, times are pretty good right now on net. Yes, they're paying more for rent to groceries, but at least inflation has eased a bit, to around 8.3% in February, from a nation-leading high of 10% last year, according to Moody's Analytics. Meanwhile, wages climbed at a 13.9% pace in the third quarter of 2022, the last for which regional data are available. That's more than any other city. For Midland's employers, desperate times prompt desperate measures. Midland Memorial Hospital is scouring local high schools for workers. Like many health providers nationwide, it's been unable to recruit nurses at any wage. So executives have partnered with the Boy Scouts of America to host a one-year training camp where students learn to do things like draw blood. About 40 have signed up so far. The goal is to hire some of them for evening or weekend work at $16 an hour. Part of the lure for kids might be the gruesome stories they'll get to tell their friends. What did you see that was the grossest thing in the ER? Chief Nurse Kit Bredemus jokes during a staff meeting one March afternoon. The hospital has also hired an HR company to recruit nurses from Canada, the Philippines, and Africa, he says, after boosting wages last year. Hard to keep up. Even energy firms in the region, which raked in billions in profits last year, making it easier to raise pay, are concerned about a shortage of workers. The Permian Strategic Partnership, a group of local energy businesses, has contributed $10.6 million to fund scholarships for students in certain four-year programs at the University of the Permian Basin. The university also offers free tuition to Texas residents, and households earning $100,000 or less are eligible. And about 40% of the incoming class of freshmen are part of the initiative. Most of the school's graduates end up staying in the region. The university is facing its own hiring challenges for professors and faculty. It's hard to keep up with wages, says Sandra Woodley, the university's president. But we need to for the talent. Adrian Carrasco, who runs Premier Energy Services, recently started working with Midland College on a part-time program that includes a paid internship. The idea came after Carrasco engaged in a fruitless search for more truck drivers, even though the offer included a salary of up to $100,000 a year, plus discounted housing in some cases. The problem was the training period. Getting a commercial driving license takes 8 weeks of school, and many potential candidates said they can't afford that much time without a salary, especially if they're supporting a family. While jobs in the Permian Basin and the vast fields surrounding the city's main through road can be lucrative, they're not available to everyone. Even in a booming jobs market like Midland, people get left out. Carl Borowski runs Rope Youth, a nonprofit that provides meals for those who can't afford them. His program fed 4,300 children in 2021 and twice as many last summer. This summer, he estimates it'll be closer to 12,000. Often kids from single-parent households whose mothers work multiple jobs for lower pay. He buys the same 9 items for the food bags he doles out to kids each week, including cans of ravioli and dry pasta. It cost $1,300 per pickup last year, and now it's closer to $1,900. Borowski says he's often surprised by who shows up to get help. You're seeing more of the soccer mom crowd now, pulling up in new SUVs to get food, he said. When the pay goes up, so does rent, food, and other stuff. From the Inside Pages. Want to adopt? Check out these adoptable animals in Midland. Hop into the Midland Animal Shelter to adopt an extra special pet. By Mercedes Cordero. Want to adopt? There are plenty of dogs and cats waiting for their forever home. The adoption fee of $75 includes a microchip, rabies booster vaccinations, parvo distemper for dogs, and FVRCP for cats, and the spay or neuter of the adopted animal. Every week, volunteer photographer Tasha Sport photographs some of the animals available for adoption. On a monthly basis, the shelter takes care of approximately 350 to 400 pets. Here's more information on how you can adopt. To adopt one of these pets, please call the shelter to set an appointment at 432 684 7420. Hours of operation closed Sunday and Monday, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. The shelter will be closed this Friday in observance of Good Friday. The shelter is located at 1200 North Fairgrounds Road. We have a collection of photographs featuring various dogs, and I'm going to give you the caption of each photo right now. Fluke, a one-year-old German Shepherd. Marlin, a five-year-old male Akita. Darth, a three-year-old male pit bull mix. Roscoe, a one-year-old male Doberman Pinscher. Photos courtesy of Tasha Sport Photography, Petunia. One-year-old female heeler mix. Quiggin, five-year-old male pit bull mix. By the way, all of these dogs are outfitted with either cute bunny ears, bandanas, and they're all in a pastel setting with Easter eggs and other things that represent Easter. Apartment rent growth in Midland above state average by Stuart Doreen. When it comes to year-over-year apartment rent growth, Midland and Odessa continue to set a pace that other Texas cities can't match. Apartmentlist.com reported in its national rent report that the Petroplex cities rate first and second when it comes to rent growth compared to 1 year earlier. Rents in Odessa have jumped 20% in the last 12 months. Rents in Midland are up 17.8%. Apartmentlist.com shows only Galveston also showed year-over-year growth over 10%, 12.3%. The online apartment guide also reported in the national rent report that year-over-year rent growth across the nation is continuing to decelerate and now stands at 2.6%, its lowest level since April 2021. Year-over-year growth is now pacing slightly below the average rate from 2018 to 2019, 2.8%, and is likely to decline even further in the months ahead. Rents in Midland increased 0.6% in March, according to apartmentlist.com, moving to $836 average for a one-bedroom apartment and $1,048 for an average two-bedroom. Lubbock was home to the largest two-bedroom rent across West Texas, $1,056. Other two-bedroom rents totaled $1,047 in San Angelo, $999 in Abilene, and $906 in Odessa. Apartmentlist.com reports the following two-bedroom rents in larger cities across the state: $1,202 in Houston, $1,304 in San Antonio, $1,317 in Fort Worth, $1,435 in Dallas, and $1,779 in Austin. Other rents of note included $1,579 in the Woodlands. Locations with $2,000 plus a month rents were $2,229 in Flower Mound and $2,109 in Frisco. Obituaries published in the Midland Reporter-Telegram Tuesday, April 4th. Carol Warren. Carol Vineyard Warren, 86, passed away peacefully March 30th. A memorial service is scheduled for Monday, April 17th at 3 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church of Midland, followed by a reception at the Petroleum Club of Midland from 4 to 5:30 p.m. Carol was born in Wharton, Texas on May 15th, 1936, to Laverne and B.L. Vineyard. At the University of Texas, she met the love of her life, John Richard Warren. Carol and Jimmy were married in 1957. Carol is survived by son Rick Warren of Austin and his children Trey Warren and Haley Rankin Richard, daughter Mary Pat Nelson and husband Jim of Midland, and their daughters Carol Ann Mayers and husband Keaton, Catherine Nelson, Paige Purvis and husband Jack, and Sarah Nelson, son Sterling Warren and wife Ann of Midland, and daughters Megan Savani and husband Arian, Eileen Warren and Molly Warren, son Jeff Summers and wife Sharla of Greenwood, Texas, and children Krista Good and husband Sage, Jake Summers and Caitlin Summers, plus three great-grandchildren. Preceding her in death are husband Johnny Warren, brother Lynn Vineyard, and her second husband, Ben Burkett. The family would like to acknowledge and thank Mary Pena, Sally Castillo, Angela Barella, Crystal Barella, and Sarah Borhan for the love and care each provided Carol. They were such a blessing, and the family is immensely grateful. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Young Life of Midland, Midland Humane Coalition, or First Presbyterian Church of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Dempsey Taylor Sr. Dempsey Lee Taylor Sr. went to be with the Lord March 23rd after 88 wonderful years. He was born in Bowling, Texas, to the late Jesse Taylor and Carrie Bell Taylor. He is survived by his wife, Artelia Taylor, daughter Kathy Fee, son Dempsey Taylor Jr., stepson Charles E. Jackson, stepdaughter Demetrius Payne, brother Roland Waddy, daughter-in-law Janita Taylor, and a host of grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Dempsey is preceded in death by his parents, Carrie Bell Taylor and Jesse Taylor. Children, Stevie Taylor, Charles Taylor, Kenneth Taylor, Stephanie Taylor, and brother, Will Taylor. To respect the family's wishes, services will be private. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezfh.com. Donald McClurg, November 25th, 1938 to March 30th, 2023. Donald Lee McClurg passed away March 30th. Donald Clurg was born in Odessa on November 25th, 1938 to Herschel Woodrow McClurg and Bonnie Weaver McClurg. He is survived by his wife, Joanne Markle, Sparkle, McClurg of Midland, his daughter, Lee Ann McClurg of Louisville, Texas, and his son, Hunter William, and partner, Bill McClurg of Fort Worth, Texas, his brother, Tudor McClurg, and wife, Patty of Snyder, Texas, and nephew, Carl McClurg of Slidell, Louisiana. Memorials and donations to Comstock Baptist Church, P.O. Box 929, Comstock, Texas, 78837. Manor Park, 5112 Sinclair Avenue, Midland. Grand Champion, P.O. Box 1156, Fort Davis, Texas, 79734. Or Paisano Baptist Assembly, P.O. Box 973, Alpine, Texas, 79831. Elizabeth Leanne Midkiff Giles, March 8, 1947 to March 22, 2023. With heaviest of heart, we say farewell to Elizabeth Leanne Midkiff Giles, who passed peacefully into the arms of her Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, March 22nd. Leanne was born in Midland on March 8, 1947, to Hunter and Melba Midkiff, with big brothers Jimmy and Jerry ever her protectors. She leaves behind her son and daughter-in-law, Brandon and Rachel, her stepson Robert, her brother and sister-in-law, Jim and Pat, brother-in-law Tommy, plus grandkids, great-grandkids, and many, many cousins. She is preceded in death by her parents, her brother Jerry, her husband CJ, and numerous aunts, uncles, and cousins. A public visitation will be held April 5th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home, 4616 North Big Spring Street, Midland. The chapel service will be held April 6th at 11:30 a.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home. In lieu of flowers and following suit with Leanne's love for animals, memorial contributions are welcome to be made at Massa Rescue, a nonprofit dog rescue located in Midland. Pamela Jean Thornburg Farmer. Pam was born December 30th, 1949, in Linwood, California, and passed away March 31st, 2023, in Midland, after a long battle with COPD and emphysema. She is preceded in death by her husband, Mikkel Farmer, parents Otis and Jean Grider, and siblings Debbie Jacobson and Guy Grider. She is survived by her three children, Mary Cook and husband Charlie of Midland, Tammy Thornburg of Midland, and Jason and wife Teresa of Cleveland, Texas. Stepchildren Aaron, Stephen, and Matt Farmer, and numerous nieces, nephews, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to the COPD Foundation. Mom did not want a funeral or memorial and had been adamant about that for years, and we are honoring her wishes. Tommy Lathan, December 29, 1939 to April 1, 2023. Tommy Ray Lathan, 83, of Rankin, Texas, left us to go to his Heavenly Father at 12:28 a.m. on April 1, 2023. Tommy was born on December 29, 1939, to Jay and Aileen Lathan in Denison, Texas. On June 28, 1958, he married Joyce Falk in Bront, Texas. Tommy was preceded in death by his parents, his brother Harvey Lathan, and wife Betty, and his infant sister Noretta Lathan. Tommy is survived by his wife of 64 years, Joyce Latham of Rankin, his sons David and wife Carrie of Greenwood, Gary and wife Kristen of La Jolla, Denny and wife Debbie of Midland. He is also survived by numerous grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Services were held at 2 p.m. Monday, April 3rd at the Rankin Cemetery. Arrangements were under the care of Schaefer Nichols Funeral Home of Crane. The family requests that memorials be made to Pecos River Encampment, P.O. Box 184, Iran, Texas, 79744. Death notice from Tuesday. Jacob Parker. Jacob Parker, 35, of Stanton, Texas, passed away Tuesday, March 21st. To respect the family's wishes, services will be private. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezfh.com. Because of an error, we missed the Midland Reporter Telegram's obituaries published Saturday, April 1st. We're going to read those now. Mary Lee Huckaba. Mary Lee Huckaba, 87, known to most as Mimi, passed away on Tuesday, March 28th, surrounded by family. The family will host a visitation from 4 to 6 p.m. Sunday, April 2nd at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Services for this fiery, competitive lady who touched countless lives will be Monday, April 3rd at 2 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Live streaming of the service will be available at npwelch.com. Mary was born on August 30th, 1935 in Wichita Falls, Texas. She married the love of her life, Renee Coach Huckaba, May 26, 1956. She is survived by her husband of 66 years, Renee Huckaba, her son Kyle Huckaba and wife Terry of Midland, plus grandchildren and great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her parents, Golia and Artie Johnson, her oldest brother, Dr. Roger Gene Johnson, and her middle brother, Kenneth Johnson. The family would also like to express their appreciation to the nurses and doctors of Midland Memorial and expressly thank visiting angel Heidi for her love and care of Mary. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Virginia Wade. Virginia Jenny Pepper Wade, 87, passed away Tuesday, March 28th at her home in Midland. Jenny was born December 18th, 1935 in McCamey to H.C. Pepper and Bessie Leach Pepper. She was raised in Big Lake. On June 9th, 1950, she married Wayne Wade. She will be interred next to her husband at Fairview Cemetery. Graveside service will be April 7th at 10:30 a.m. Jenny and Wayne had four children, Mona Turner, Deborah Tate, deceased, Kathy McKay, and Earl Wade Jr. Jenny has 14 grandchildren, 45 great-grandchildren, 8 great-great-grandchildren, many nieces, nephews, and cousins. The family is grateful for the loving, kind, and professional care provided by Gentiva Hospice. William E. Gibson. William E. Gibson was born in Winters, Texas, on the 6th of September, 1924, and passed away in Houston on Thursday, the 23rd of March, 2023. He was 98 years of age. A memorial service and celebration of his life is to be conducted at 11 o'clock in the morning, Saturday, the 29th of April, in the chapel of the Church of St. John the Divine, 2450 River Oaks Boulevard in Houston. Immediately following, all are invited to once again greet the family during a reception in the nearby Summers Hall. In lieu of customary remembrances, and for those desiring, the full notice is to also include a listing of philanthropic organizations to which memorial contributions may be directed. Death notices from Saturday, April 1st. Anne McLaughlin. Anne McLaughlin, 93 of Midland, passed away March 24th. Celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, April 8th at Parks Faudry Chapel of Manor Park in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Carol Blake. Carol Blake, 94 of Midland, passed away March 30th. The family will receive guests from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, April 13th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, April 14th at the Episcopal Church of the Holy Trinity with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, April 4th, 2023. Disputed records show details of OFR training issue. The city of Odessa was forced Monday to reveal more details about an Odessa fire rescue investigation after the Texas Attorney General's office sided with the Odessa American in a battle over public records. Back in January, the city of Odessa hired the law firm of Davidson Sheen to investigate an incident in which several OFR cadets sustained blisters during a training exercise. The Odessa American requested emails, texts, witness statements, and other documents after former OFR Chief John Alvarez said an investigation has already been conducted and disciplinary actions taken. The city's legal staff asked for the AG's opinion, arguing some of the documents weren't subject to the Texas Public Information Act. They also said the documents could not be disclosed because the investigation was closed and no one was convicted of a crime or given deferred adjudication. However, they also argued the records can't be disclosed because the city has reopened the investigation. In addition, the city also said the records shouldn't be disclosed because litigation resulting from the incident is responsibly anticipated. On March 29, the AG's office sent the city and the OA a letter notifying both the documents were subject to the TPIA. The city had not established litigation, were reasonably anticipated, and had not proven the documents were related to any pending criminal investigation or prosecution. On Monday morning, the city released a series of emails and attachments between Alvarez, Human Resource Director Charles Hurst, and then Senior Assistant City Attorney Jan Baker regarding the investigation and the disciplinary action taken. Hurst indicated he concurred with the actions taken. The documents confirm what sources told the AO in January. Alvarez himself sparked the investigation after noticing cadets with bandaged hands and discovering they'd received blisters during a physical training exercise. They further confirmed now-retired training chief Marty Moya was suspended for 5 days without pay, and training captain Chris Norrid received a written reprimand. According to the documents, 21 people were interviewed during the investigation by three now-retired OFR staff members, assistants Chief Saul Ortega, Joey White, and Rod Huber. The investigation revealed most of the cadets felt the training exercise that resulted in the blisters was punishment meted out because they didn't volunteer for extra duty when asked by Norrid. Documents show most of them complained about Norrid's management style and said they believed the central B shift had unfairly decided they weren't as hardworking or as good as previous candidates. Most of them also said they'd been hazed at times by a few personnel on the shift. According to the documents, Moya denied using the PT to punish the cadets and expressed remorse for the injuries and the language used during a lecture. In my findings, I do not think Chief Moya intentionally injured any cadets. He was, however, negligent as a supervisor for his actions that led to the injuries. Chief Moya was also out of line with some of the language used and tone used to lecture the cadets for what he considered a lack of motivation, Ortega wrote in his report. Norrid told the investigators he didn't think anything was wrong with what had taken place, and he likes to be hard on cadets because everyone else is too easy on them, Ortega said. Norrid said he thought the cadets needed more hard structure. Ortega wrote in his findings he believed the cadet program needed to be restructured. He also said several other things needed to be addressed. The fact the cadets were injured, the attitude and mistreatment of cadets on a regular basis by Norrid, the fact Moya and Norrid failed to report the injuries, and the inappropriate language used by Norrid and Moya with the cadets. In my findings, I think Captain Norrid has a problem with abuse of authority. He does not have a good understanding of how to relate to employees. Captain Norrid has a strict and overbearing management style that does not align with the current workforce, and it is hindering his ability to work with the cadets. Captain Norrid's management style is not working and needs to be changed. He is creating a difficult environment for newer cadets and other employees, Ortega wrote. Ortega also indicated Captain Austin Yokeman was negligent for not stopping his crew from making inappropriate comments to the cadets, and he should have known OFR does not use PT as punishment. Yoakum was ordered to appear at a pre-disciplinary hearing in September, but the city did not release any documents reflecting punishment had been meted out. Davidson Sheen's second investigation is ongoing. According to records obtained under the TPIA, the law firm charges $195 to $375 an hour. Up through February 24th, the firm had billed the city just under $39,000 for this second investigation. Flooding causes Monday closure at Ector County Courthouse. Ector County building and maintenance crews had a busy Monday after flooding caused a full-day closure to the Ector County Courthouse. During a phone interview on Monday morning, Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett said the flooding was caused by a failure in the pop-off valve for the hot water expansion tank. Building and maintenance are still looking into why the valve failed, he said. We are certainly going to look at why that piece of equipment didn't do what it was supposed to do and caused all of this, Fawcett said. This isn't the first time this courthouse has flooded. We are just blessed this time it wasn't sewage. This is something that we need to address moving forward. Fawcett spoke about some of the extent of the damage to the courthouse. The damage in three of our courtrooms is pretty extensive. As far as the ceiling tiles, the carpet, the wood panels on the sides, Fawcett said, there's quite a bit of water. We are working on cleaning that up. We have stopped the leak. Now it's just getting rid of all the water, assessing the damage, and taking care of the damage. Though he doesn't have an exact time when the valve failed, Fawcett said an attorney for the Ector County District Attorney's Office was at the courthouse on Sunday night preparing for a trial, but there was no signs of flooding. Fawcett said the same attorney alerted flooding Monday morning. Somewhere after 8 p.m. Sunday and Monday morning is when the problem happened, he said. Fawcett said he hopes for the courthouse to reopen Tuesday. As we work throughout the day, we will be in a good situation where it's safe for the public and safe for the employees, Fawcett said about reopening Tuesday. The courthouse recently received a $1 million technology upgrade, but Fawcett said preliminary reports look good. Fawcett said a full extent will be known late Monday or early Tuesday. Preliminarily, our electronics and technologies are okay, Fawcett said. The video screens in the courtrooms that are there for the public as well as the computers that are there for the judges seem to be okay. We aren't going to know a full diagnostic until Tuesday or perhaps later Monday evening. We are going to work on that and make sure that we are functional. That way we can resume services Tuesday morning. Chamber to honor business leaders. The Odessa Chamber of Commerce will host the 2023 Entrepreneur of the Year and Business Hall of Fame luncheon at 11:30 a.m. Thursday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center. In order to emphasize the importance of Odessa's small business community, the Odessa Chamber honors one individual each year as the Entrepreneur of the Year. Additionally, the Chamber inducts a number of individuals into the Business Hall of Fame. The 2023 Entrepreneur of the Year honoree is John F. Landgraf. As President and Vice President of LCA, Landgraf has been the principal in charge of residential community projects spanning thousands of acres, as well as commercial land developments, water and wastewater treatment plants, large paving and drainage projects, landfills, and large ranch surveys. Landgraf has served as a member and officer of many technical organizations. He was a past branch president of the West Texas branch of the American Society of Civil Engineers, Chapter Director of Permian Basin Chapter of TSPE and a member of NSPE, Professional Engineers in Private Practice, and the Texas Society of Professional Surveyors. Landgraf maintains current registration as a professional engineer as well as a professional land surveyor. The Odessa Chamber of Commerce 2023 Business Hall of Fame inductees are Willie Bellario, Jr., owner of the original Dent Shop, Steve Barron, partner of Todd Barron, Thomason, Hudman, Vibout and Rodriguez, P.C., Stacy L. Brown, president of Odessa Regional Medical Center, Dr. Matthew First, owner of First Plastic Surgery, and Ben Montgomery, owner of BCM and Associates, Incorporated. Each year, the Odessa Chamber of Commerce is proud to honor business owners and leaders in our community who have excelled in their respective profession. This year is no exception in that the field of nominees was exceptional. John Landgraf, along with the Business Hall of Fame inductees, are incredible examples of selfless leadership. They all work hard for the betterment of this community and have parlayed the many business opportunities into successful companies, said Renee Earls, President CEO of the Odessa Chamber of Commerce. They represent the tens of thousands of employees and entrepreneurs who have found Odessa to be a great place to work, start businesses, and plant roots that will benefit many generations of Odessans to come, she added. Quick hits. Free tax assistance. The Ector County Northside Senior Center, 1225 Adams Avenue, has scheduled free tax assistance for seniors from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays through April 11th. Appointment is required. For more information or to make an appointment, call 432-337-5281. Bustin' for Badges raffle tickets. Bustin' for Badges clay shoot raffle tickets are available at the Odessa Police Department or Ector County Sheriff's Office. Raffle items are Polaris Ranger 570, $10,400 value, Kent Quick 52, $50 gas cards, $260 value, and oil change gift cards, and Traeger Wood Pellet Grill, $900 value, Midland Meat Company, $500 gift card. The 10th annual shoot will be held May 4th and 5th at Wind Walker Farms in Martin County. This event benefits local law enforcement, OPD, MPD, ECSO, and MCSO, and helps pay for much-needed equipment. Raffle tickets are $20 each. There are a limited number of tickets. The raffle drawing will take place on May 5th at Wind Walker Farms, and you do not have to be present to win. For raffle tickets or information, go by OPD's front desk or call OPD at 432-335-3322 or ECSO at 432-335-3050. To register for the shoot, visit bustin4badges.org. Texas Warrior Mud Out. Be the Change Permian Basin has scheduled the Texas Warrior Mud Out April 15th at the Rock the Desert, 2000 FM 1788 Midland. Packets will be picked up from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. Kids Crusade Race starts at 8 a.m. Group Advanced Race starts at 8:45 a.m. Group Intermediate Race starts at 9:30 a.m. and Group Beginner Race starts at 10:15 a.m. Teams will complete obstacles over roughly a 5-kilometer course that will rely on team skills and support. Teams should be a minimum of 3, but there is no maximum. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/MT74Y3U2. Mother-Son Dance. Odessa Parks and Recreation has scheduled a Mother-Son Dance from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. May 13th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. Visit tinyurl.com/59VE475E. OC Jazz Band to perform Swing into Spring. The Odessa College Jazz Band, under the direction of Eric Baker, Department Chair of Visual and Performing Arts, will perform a free concert at the Globe Theater at 7 p.m. April 18th. The band, renowned for its talented student musicians, promises a lively and eclectic performance featuring an array of jazz styles such as swing, blues, funk, and Latin. The ensemble will showcase their versatility and passion for jazz as they take the audience on a musical journey through the diverse world of this beloved genre. Swing into Spring is a free, family-friendly event that aims to bring the community together through the power of music. The audience can expect to hear classic jazz standards as well as contemporary hits, all arranged in the unique and lively style of the OC Jazz Band. Seating is limited, so arrive early to secure your spot. The doors will open at 6:30 p.m. For more information about the Odessa College Jazz Band and the Swing into Spring concert, visit the Odessa College website or contact the Odessa College Music Department. Pre-K Academy at MC accepting applications. The Pre-K Academy at Midland College is now accepting applications for the 2023-24 school year. Applications should be submitted through the Apply Midland webpage on the MISD website, midlandisd.net/apply. The Academy provides a high-quality, full-day pre-kindergarten program for children who turn 3 or 4 years old on or before September 1st of the current year. The Academy is available at no cost or reduced cost to families who meet one of the eligibility criteria. Families may also choose available tuition spots, a news release said. With the opening of the new Midland College Pre-K Academy and Center for Teaching Excellence building in August, the Pre-K Academy at Midland College will have the ability to serve 296 students during the 2023-2024 school year. Community events, community outreach and cardiovascular health coach, and community outreach for diabetes education code, Midland Health is offering a free support group for anyone interested in learning about diabetic and cardiovascular health. It will be held each second Monday of the month from 6 to 7 p.m. at First Baptist Church, 2104 West Louisiana Avenue, room D100102. Call 432-221-2285 or email morgan.tennis@midlandhealth.org for more information. Healthy Cities HEB Grocery Store Tour is 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. April 13th at the HEB on Loop 250. Meet in front of the barbecue restaurant. Tickets. HEB Grocery Store Tour - Healthy City. OurHealthyCity.com. MISD opens enrollment for students. Enrollment is now open for families planning to attend Midland ISD for the 2023-24 school year. The enrollment period is for students, including those applying for pre-K or starting kindergarten, new students at MISD, and all returning students. Students returning to the same campus also must re-enroll using their Skyward Family Access account. We listened to your feedback and made changes to the application system to make it user-friendly as possible, Aaron Villarreal, Director of Student Information Systems, said in the press release. Parents will still have to complete the forms, but we've eliminated much of the repetition and improved the overall process. The enrollment website includes step-by-step instructions on how to enroll using Skyward. It also includes a built-in Google Translator, which makes it easy to navigate regardless of your preferred language. The enrollment website can also connect parents to Apply Midland, where parents can explore different schools and use the school finder to determine their campus. If parents have additional questions, representatives at their campus can guide them through the process. Coinciding with the opening of the enrollment window, parents should also be aware of the following. The second application window is now open for schools of choice at MidlandISD.net/apply. Pre-K applications are now being accepted at MidlandISD.net/apply. Kindergarten Roundup is set for the week of May 15th. Stay tuned for more information about open houses at each campus. Ector County man accused of sexual assault of a child. A 30-year-old Ector County man was arrested Friday after another man told Ector County Sheriff's Office investigators the two of them became lovers while he was 16 and under the age of consent. According to an ECSO report, detectives were investigating an aggravated sexual assault of a child case when they became aware Albert Reyes was in a dating relationship with an 18-year-old man. When detectives spoke with the 18-year-old, he told them he dated Reyes from September 2020 through June 2021, and they were intimate at least four times during that same period while he was underage, the report stated. The age of consent in Texas is 17. Reyes was arrested on suspicion of sexual assault of a child, a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. Reyes remained in the Ector County Jail Monday on a $750,000 surety bond.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.